Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We're going to talk about security right now. We hear about so much meddling in of Russia in the election and cyber attacks. How exactly can that happen? Our friend Jason Glassberg joins us, co-founder of Cassaba Security. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you, sir.
Take us into election hacking or Russian hacking 101 and explain from the beginning what are we talking about here, because I think it is, again, one of those things about which everybody is aware, but maybe we don't know a lot about it.
Well, I think we've got, you know, two threats, if you can compartmentalize them. You've got threats against the voting machines and the voting infrastructure, and you've got these nefarious social media campaigns which look to sow discord amongst the various, you know, candidates and their supporters. And I think that's really where the last indictment that just came out a couple of days ago talks more to the Russian efforts in the social media and disruption and attacks against other political parties, more so than attacks against the voting machines and our actual voting infrastructure. So really what we're looking at are social media campaigns, Twitter campaigns, Facebook campaigns, sowing fake news that get people really annoyed at one another and cause people not to trust the outcomes of these elections.
So you begin, I'm trying to go from law and order here, so they find the body, Lenny makes a smart comment, and then they solve the murder, right, and try him. In this case of a cyber attack, I guess once you realize you've been attacked, That is, in essence, to carry the metaphor forward, the body. And then from there, well, I guess you don't even have a body. How do you determine that you've been attacked? And then how do you tell who did them from that point?
Well, you know, in the case of these last indictments, we had a situation where the DNC was hacked. Emails that became quite famous were leaked, and that information was made public. And the people who wrote those emails weren't the ones who had released these things. So the assumption there was that they were, in fact, hacked. Mm-hmm. And they were able to build forensically a trail of break-ins, right? They found evidence of the machines being broken into. They found evidence of phishing mails that allowed them to get passwords into these mails. And they were able to trace where these attacks came from and where these fake emails, these phishing emails, were derived from. And they pointed back to Russia. So the prevailing thought that was obviously proven in some level of court was that this was committed by these Russian folks.
In terms of accessing databases, I know we had conversations at the time with our former Secretary of State saying that, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't think the information was online, so it could have been hacked. What did we learn from the indictments about trying to tap into voter rolls, or what exactly were they trying to do, and was there a way that that could have happened?
Well, there, you know, anything that touches the internet is always susceptible to attack. And if any of those systems that touch the internet also touch these data, they are theoretically subject to attack. There was mention of 21 states being attacked. Now, those states were not named, and the purposes of those attacks are not known. Voter information in order to have a social media campaign, or it could have been To actually go in and affect those voter rolls, to either add or remove folks. But that part was not discussed. Now, there's never been any proof that the actual voting infrastructure was attacked or somehow compromised by any of our adversaries. So that, you know, that's an important point. So it's not like voting machines have been hacked and falling down all over the country, because there's absolutely no proof of that. But what there is proof of is that folks went out and got information off of candidates, both parties, and tried to use that information to sow discord and create all sorts of fervor that would kind of undermine people's faith in our election system.
So in terms of what could be happening, and the intelligence agency says it's continuing for the 2018 elections or in advance of them, are we talking about the same kind of thing, or is this the type of intrusion, hacking, what have you, cyber attack that expands exponentially because of the technology involved? Does it evolve slowly?
Well, I think what's happening is that, you know, elections, there are over 8,000 election jurisdictions in the U.S., right? Every one of them is controlled by the local jurisdiction. It's not a federal, we can't just wave a magic wand. The government can't just say, everybody's got to fix these machines. So you've got different counties and different states that have different levels of sophistication. And so, you know, you run into a problem of having some very antiquated equipment out there. And clearly those kinds of machines and those kinds of systems are certainly at risk. But again, I think what we're going to see and what we're going to continue to see is more of this kind of fake news, kind of dirt being dug up and released anonymously that causes people to say, hey, you know, what's going on here? Is this a legitimate election? I think the other area that we're going to be at risk of is things like a denial of service attacks. Imagine a very close national election that comes down to Florida and Florida suddenly finds itself offline. Right. Mm-hmm. People are going to accuse one side of the other of having some kind of play in it. And the whole country is going to be up in arms because this election can't be resolved. And this is the kind of attack that causes people to lose faith in our ability to hold fair and you know, regulated elections. And I think that's where the risk lies.
Let me make this perfectly clear, to borrow a phrase. This is not about collusion. This has nothing to do with collusion. This is about the incontrovertible fact, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jason, that the Russians were up to some internet shenanigans when it came to the election, correct?
I absolutely agree with you. Yes, you are correct.
This has nothing to do with anybody taking part in it. This is just something that Russia decided to do. Jason Glassberger, guest co-founder of Cassava Security. With that disclaimer given, a text comes in and says, if hackers don't work, won't let their location, if they don't want their location to be discovered, it won't. I can appear to be sending this text from Russia if I wanted to with simple networking tools. So should the internet be country segregated because gullible people believe fake news on social media? That's an interesting question. What do you think?
Well, I would say yes, if you take proper precautions to hide your tracks. And one of the interesting pieces of evidence that was released was that there's a technology called VPN, right? VPN is a virtual private network, which allows you to hide your network traffic. Now, normally, when you connect to a server or connect to a mail, you would turn your VPN service on. And then, yes, it becomes very, not impossible, but very, very difficult to trace where that communication came from. In the case of one of these email traces, it turns out that one of the Russian officers did not turn on his VPN, a real rookie mistake, if you will.
Really?
He did not turn on his VPN, and that allowed them to trace the communication all the way back to the FSB headquarters or GRU headquarters, one of the Russian security entities, back to their headquarters in Moscow. And that really was kind of a watershed moment in the unraveling of the case. So the fact that they didn't turn their VPN on, they were able to trace this back to this actual IP address location, meant that they had some hard evidence that this was not something that was domestic. This was something that had originated out in Russia. So your listener is correct in the sense that you can make it very difficult to trace that, but the fact is that they committed a rookie mistake, right? And this ultimately is the undoing of a lot of criminals, right? The smartest minds in the world sometimes screw up, and that's what happened in this particular case.
So if that had not happened, there would be no indication that this was the Russians or no link to the Russians?
No, there were other avenues. Again, you know, as in any investigation and forensic investigation, it's all little pieces of evidence that add up to paint a bigger picture, right? It turns out that this Russian group was buying the use of servers to store their data, and they were paying for it in Bitcoin, and they were able to trace their Bitcoin wallets back to this group of Russians. Right. So again, it's these little pieces of evidence that it in any criminal case, right, all add up and kind of painted this picture that they were able to show. And, you know, these are indictments. This isn't just conjecture. This was something that had to go through a federal in the United States in order to get these indictments. So certainly not just someone out there speculating. You know, you have to in our country's ability to prosecute criminals, and that's what this is being treated as. This is not a political case. This is a criminal prosecution.
Was there a Bitcoin manipulation that helped fund some of this, or am I making that up?
No, that's exactly what it was. They were able to buy They were collecting lots of data, right? They had collected all of these emails. They had broken into these accounts. They compromised these machines, and they needed places to get out from. And so in order to rent that server space, they paid for it with Bitcoin.
Tell me about your work last year. Is that basically what you've been speaking of?
No, well, we were working as a company with a number of institutions trying to formulate ways of having effective online voting that could be considered secure. And so we were testing a number of online systems that could potentially solve the problem of how you would be able to do this. You know, very much like you can have a certain amount of trust in your banking because it goes through a level of review and testing. We were doing testing with various online voting systems. And it turns out you can make them quite secure. The problem is access. You know, it's easy for a lot of us because we have PCs and we have phones and stuff, but there are a lot of Americans who don't have ready access to terminals to be able to do online voting. And it becomes a difficult problem because, you know, it's a right. It's not a privilege. And so, you know, who would ultimately pay for these voting systems and who would ultimately be the one to maintain them becomes kind of a stickling issue because, again, these are systems that need to be run by the states and the various voting jurisdictions. It's not a federal program.
So what do you do to stop the computer chicanery going on? Or internet chicanery going on with the Russians for the 2018 election?
Well, I think one, you know, people need to understand there's never any case or anything proven that someone has actually hacked a voting machine and changed the tabulated votes, right? So that's something that's just not happened. That's not what any of these investigations or any of these talks are about. So that's first and foremost. I think the second thing is people need to just understand that there are folks out there whose prime motivation is just to make us angry at one another, right? And sometimes
I can see it from the text coming in, Jason. I can see it now where it's the texts are coming in about Hillary and about this and about that, and all we're talking about is the technical aspect here.
Exactly. I mean, that's the problem with this. Ultimately, the problem with this entire topic is it becomes political.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And that's going to kill everything. I mean, last year there was a huge uproar because the government wanted to classify voting systems as critical infrastructure. Right. Just like you would have a nuclear reactor or a dam, and you want to protect them against foreign attack. And there was a huge uproar because all of the state's attorneys generals fought back and said, no, you can't call this critical infrastructure because that means the Department of Homeland Security, a federal entity, will then have, you know, oversight over these systems. And it just at some point became patently ridiculous because we've got this national issue, right? I mean, it's incontrovertible that there are foreign entities who are trying to affect our voting. Right. And yet we can as a country agree because ultimately it's a political it comes down to a political problem. Right. Because nothing can be more political than voting.
Yep,
right.
Thank you.
Anything more political.
Jason, I appreciate your time. I really do. And again, for those of you texting in with the conspiracy theories, this, that, they did it. We're just talking about technically how it happened. That's all we're talking about.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!